This audio is brought to you by State Farm agent Alicia Kozacek, your local agent and good neighbour. Alicia has got you covered with personalised service and reliable coverage for all your insurance needs. Call or stop by her office on Hart Street in Buffalo and see how she can help you save and protect what matters most to you. This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
All right, good evening, everybody. A little loud, but I'll try to not yell as we're talking here this evening. I'm Charles Oskey, I'm the superintendent here in D. Johnson County School District Number 1. And we are here tonight to talk about recommendations that I'm making to the Board of Trustees for the reduction in graduation credits. With that being said, my clicker, Mr. Anderson, is up in the back. This clicker here is not working this evening, so just please be patient with as we move through this. However, I do want to say it's a lot about facts tonight, and then when we're done, I am going to take this slideshow and actually do a screen video and go through and explain it and make sure that it's available on the website for more people in the community if they do have questions as we kind of move through. So, kind of the segment of events is going to go through some data, why we're here, why the decision is being recommended. Then there's going to be a couple question and answer sessions that happen in between it, and then we'll wrap up at the end. And then I will be available for conversation after we're done presenting here today. So Craig, let's go to the next slide. So what is our purpose? Our purpose is to understand the key why facts about the recommendation to reduce board required graduation credits from 28 to 24. And then it moves into this. One of the presentations that I gave is truly understanding what ADM is, because you're going to hear me say that a lot through this presentation. So ADM is your average daily membership. ADM is the key factor in determining the amount of funding the school district receives as it reflects the size of the student population served. So in short summary, that's the number of students we have enrolled in our school information system, SIS, which is PowerSchool. That's how we generate funding for a district. Not only we, but everybody throughout the state with the 100. What I need to emphasize is this number impacts everything. This number with the number of students impacts what we get for facilities, what we get for staffing, what we get for everything in the model. So the key fact behind this is part of the discussion is just looking and planning into the future. So with that, when you hear me talk about ADM or there's a question about that, that really does drive everything within the funding model. With that understanding is we don't get control of that. We have a funding model that we put these numbers into. That funding model generates funds, and then the Board of Trustees has the responsibility to push those funds out to what they feel is the best for the district. So with that, my recommendation, transition begins this fall. We go from 28 credits, and if you'll notice here, it just goes down. So it's a four-year transition from 28 to 24. So the class of 2025 is still going to have a graduation requirement of 28. And then every year after that, so there's a transition period that takes place. So by 2029 and 2030 and beyond, that's where we're going to be with the graduation credits at 24. I want to establish something. That is the bare minimum for graduation. If funding allows, and the process of where we're at is, we can always add more credits as we move forward. But the recommendation is going to be based on a lot of different things. As you will see, all right, total graduation credit opportunity starts at 32, it will go to 28. And then this number here is going to change because we've already had some discussion. So in reality, it's 3 to 4 different elected maybe opportunities that people are talking about that might not be an option. But I'm not saying that. I'm saying our option is coming back to what is the minimum And you'll see in the later slides what other districts are doing. So this recommendation is the first step in intentionally developing and implementing a plan for long-term stability. I can't emphasize that enough. Everybody has their research, everybody has their opinion, but the reality is board policy and what our expectations are drive our flexibility to make decisions not only at the district level, but sometimes at the board level also. So ensuring that we live within our funding needs. 3 years ago when I came here, it was a $1.3 million deficit. Just want to be straight up with that. In that, the district or the board's expectation was to try to balance our budget. We are there. Okay, we're 1 year out. We're still not out of the woods, but we are moving in that direction. Part of what some of those scenarios are, we also had a $500,000 hole or deficit with insurance that we had to cover with COVID and some other things. So this hasn't been a journey that just happened overnight. It's been a journey that we've been working on for about 3 years. However, as I start looking into the future, and we start asking some questions about where we're at as a district, we have to look at some hard facts. And what this is going to come down to is me being transparent to you as a community and to the Board of Trustees of how we live within our means. And we'll go through that when you see some of the data as we go through this. It's going to be needs versus wants, and there's going to be some hard conversations as we move forward. Next slide. So this is the journey. So starting in the fall of 21 to where we're at right now in 2024. Over the last 3 years, the JCSD Board of Trustees and the Superintendent has focused on researching and aligning district practices with those consistently high-performing districts and schools. So there's a lot of research. We can come up with research anywhere we want on what's best and what's not best. But the intentional focus is on what schools in Wyoming, according to the accountability and the systems and what we have to work with, what are those schools been and how are they performing and what are some of the things we need to look at as what we're doing. The recommendation is more than just scheduling. It's about creating a district-wide plan that allows JCSD number one to adjust to the changing environments of K-12 public education and the projected reduction in funding of ADM for JCSD number one. Key words. If anybody can come back in 2 years and say, the superintendent, Mr. Oski, was off by 100 students, I would gladly be the first one that stands up and admits that. But the reality, I'm looking at the data. And the reality is we need to be able to look out into the future and say, this is where we could be, and what do we have in place, so if we have to adjust, we can. So when we start looking, again, this wasn't Charles, this was a third party, Mitch Kraft, and consulting went out and looked. He was tasked with this. So when we start looking at different schools, we have VHS here, we have Powell High School, Hot Springs High School, Pinedale High School, Sheridan 1, Sheridan 2. This kind of shows you the graduation credits we have, this is what the other districts have throughout that process. So we started comparing. What do they require? What do they have? What do they have in place? So with this slide, graduation requirements or credits for JCSD number one differ significantly from the competition and surrounding high-performing districts. With that, we're going to come to what competition is here in a minute, because that's the other thing. We're not the only show in town. Those are things we have to realize now. After COVID, there's several other opportunities, schools of choice, and different things that we're competing with. So with this, this kind of shows you the data that we were looking at, where we are, where these other districts are, and we'll kind of go from there. Craig, next slide. So when you look at this, we were talking about high school and where we're at. So VHS performance. So this is our school overall performance rating card that's broke down. This is going to be on the website. You can study it more. But this is the state report card that we, as leadership and what we do as a Board of Trustees when we start talking about data, these are the performances that we base. So you'll notice there's categories all the way across the top where they meet. All right, if you'll notice here, the focus this year is on growth and equity at VHS. And then we start looking at the high-performing districts. So this, again, will be for you to look at. I'll give you a second to look at it, but this is Pyle High School, which is one of the schools that was recognized as consistently being high-performing. And then we'll go on to the next one. So you have Pinedale High School. This is their rankings, exceeding median. And then you got Hot Springs. We last year, as a group, went to Pyle and went to Hot Springs and visited their schools. Okay, we went, we asked questions. There were two teams. One went to Pyle, the other one went to Demopolis. And then we all gathered and we met in Warland on the way home. So again, this will be some data if you want to look at. It'll be on the slideshow, but these are some of the data pieces that we looked at. Again, when we identified consistently high-performing schools or districts, this is where we got some of the data. Next slide. Okay, so did you know, there's not a quiz at the end, but there's a lot of facts that go into decisions we have to make, all right? And it's about everything across the board. So with that, here we go. Okay, it's a changing landscape. I can't say it any different. 20 years ago, public school used to be the only show in town. That's the reality. Transition has started going to some other things, but then when COVID hit, it exploded with technology, the ability to have access, parents having choices of different opportunities, and that's what the next couple slides are going to show. So the next one, this is what, we are not the only educational opportunity or choice for students and parents. In some cases, people don't like to hear that, but as a superintendent, I have to realize that's a fact. Right? It's a true fact. It's not a myth. It's not something that says it's not here. I want to be transparent and say it's here in Johnson County, just like it is in every district in the state of Wyoming and in the nation. We are competing with other opportunities for kids to get diplomas. That's what it is, or to get an education. We've become a very mobile society. In that, so we go to the next slide, okay? Here are just a few. We are competing, this is JCSD number one, we're the K-12 public education. We're the ones that are held to accountability. We're the ones that have a high set of standards. And I'm just saying it straight up, we have accountability that we have to follow. If we don't, you'll see that report card that came back, if you don't follow those, then you have school improvement plans that have to be submitted to the board for approval and to the state for approval. But now we've got homeschooling, we've got private schools, we've got virtual schools, and yes, there are virtual charter schools. We've already, a lot of districts in the state already, we were one that received an application. This doesn't include other options that are out there. No schooling, that's never an option. But the reality is, this is what we're competing with. We're also competing with a different way of looking at junior colleges. So, just as a quick side fact, in the conversation with Wyoming High School Activities Association and some other superintendents, there are junior colleges that are paying students to take the GED so that they get their diploma and then they can register in school at the age of 10th or 11th grade. So we're now competing with junior colleges. All right, and now kids are wanting, so it's a whole different world we live in as we kind of move through this. So the next one. Over the past 15 years, K-12 public education has evolved. We are no longer the sole educational option for families. A great example of this is we've become very mobile as a society because of COVID. Even the Wyoming Department of Ed, I would honestly say probably 80% of their staff doesn't work in the building. They work from home. So when families work from home and they have the mobility to do it, they are taking their kids with them because there is that option of what some of that looks like. Creating a more competitive educational landscape for K-12 public education. And that's the reality for me as a superintendent. We are now in competition. We're the best show in town. However, we've got to prove that we're the best show in town. We've got to show that the rigor of what our kids are learning and how they're producing and where they're headed is part of where we're at, because we are not the only option that parents have. And this is nationwide with where we're at. We can look at stats, we can grow things, whatever, but just in some general information, 7%, I'm just going to say private school, home schools, and virtual schools
the average is between anywhere between 14 and 16% kids are choosing, and it's growing, parents, as we move forward. In addition to that, we have been stabilizing, all right, everything that we've done. My understanding historically, 2019, before I came here, things were on the chopping block, all right? Things were on the chopping block, and then COVID hit. And then we got infused with a lot of money. People said, where did that money go? Well, we've been stabilizing our budget, keeping our staff where it is, and creating a stable budget, which was part of the expectations that we balance our budget. So I can tell you that those funds are now closed. And I will tell you as a superintendent and look you straight in the face and say, I don't ever want to hear the word ESSER funds or ARP funds or anything ever again. Because even though these are closed, the audits are going to happen for the next 3 years. Here's the problem with that. The rules changed after majority of districts spent the money. Okay, so now the audits begin. So, are we in a good place? I think we are, but I also want to say, just because they're closed, in 3 years, we won't ever hear this word again, all right? But right now, every school district, including Johnson County, is going to be going through audits the next 3 years. Did they spend the money according to what the federal rules were? In addition to that, the federal government did a great job, and I am kind of throwing them under the bus here a little bit, of giving us a time frame to spend it, and then after they've spent it on the time frame is when they change the rules. So through that process, those funds now in. The next thing, which is impacted with ADM, our annual federal grants, Title I, Title II, 619, 611, those annual things that we apply for and get audited on, which can be anywhere from $600,000 to $700,000, we've already seen a reduction in 1 year of $120,000 for this year. So not only are COVID funds going away, but our general, our regular annual federal funds are going down, which impacts some of the programs we already have in our schools. All right. Johnson County, this is a fact, okay? We currently have 150 plus students that are homeschooled, private school, virtual school, or charter school. So the question is, so why? Well, Powell High School has 200 plus people that are homeschooled or private school. So it's not just Johnson County, okay? Again, when we start asking those questions, this is a common theme that we're seeing. But for you to know, that's a fact, okay? Next one. All right, here's where we're at. This was an eye-opener. I usually don't pay attention to this. But where we ended last year at the end of the year, spring of 24, we ended it right there with that number. 1,161 ADM. It's what Power School produced. It's not a figure that Charles added up and had to do. This is what our student information system produced. That's how it's put in the schedule. That's how you take attendance. All of these things fall into this. Okay, as of 9:30, we're 1,129. Today, we are 1,125. Today, we're 1125. That's down 32, or if you add an additional couple numbers to that, we're down more than 36. That's just in the course of a summer. On to the next slide. 2017-18, we were 1,280 students, which is in our prime, right, going into COVID. Okay, this is when the district was already starting to have discussions about funding. That was our height. That was our EM. We are now at 1,129, which I use that figure, which is 151 students down from 2017-18. Then we go to the next slide. This is the FS, State Facilities Commission, prediction of district average enrollment. So if we were just to use their projection, which is a math formula, it's a model, that's why I use it, because I can pull it up and say, where did you get those figures? This is a formula that generates 15 to 20 years, which facilities, John Zink and everybody else, has to work with. This is them coming to us and saying, look, you're going to be down in 9 years. How are you going to fund all the projects? This isn't us going to them crying the blues. This is them coming to us and saying, look, this is what their projection. And I hope this projected number is wrong. But I do have an obligation to say to the community and to the Board of Trustees, if we take that, where we're at now, and we subtract where they think we'll be, that's an additional 97 students. So if we go to the next slide, in that process, that means between, over a 10-year period of time, 17-18 to 28-29, our EDM is going to level out at probably 223 students less. All right? So again, these are factors that I have to take into consideration. So in that, we'll go to the next slide. Here's a reality. And these, again, I can't say it enough, projections. I would love to say in 3 years, you come back to me and say, you were so far off, we are just fine. And I'll be perfect with saying, I didn't guess right, because I'm going to be able to say at that time, because we didn't lose the funding projected, we're going to be in a good place. But we do have to start planning. A lot of projection here, 320. We got an average of 30 going to New West. We have an average of 10 students that are going virtual homeschool over that period of time. And we got early graduation, BHS will be at 275 kids. We're at 315 now. And a lot of people in the community believe, even when I graduated, we're at 360, 375. All right? BHS and the demographics look different now than it did. That's the point we have to start looking at. Okay, question and answer. There are microphones. I want to break that up. If you have questions, I would love to answer them. We're just going to take a few minutes, because if you know me, this is only one third of the way through the slides. So we do have more information to present. But if there are questions, raise your hand. I'd love to answer them.
So on the decrease from 32 to 36. So on the composition of the reduction in ADM of 32 to 36 over last summer, what is the composition of that in terms of grade level?
Yeah. So that's a great question. So that's kindergarten through 12th grade. So that's the overall district. And when I'm looking at those numbers, the demographics, we have smaller kindergarten size coming in. Right? That's some of the demographics that I think you're trying to talk about. Where does it start? And what are we seeing in the elementary? So it's kind of consistent throughout. So our elementary schools, class sizes are down. There's some of that information we can present, but it's kind of spread throughout the whole. But as a district, that number that we're talking about, that 1,100 that we're talking about, that's where the overall funding comes in. Okay, that's a great question.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out the source or the cause of that, so we can think about
it. Well, we're gonna get into some of that information here in a minute.
Okay,
so hopefully that will answer some of your questions. There's a question up here. Don't let me forget to answer it if I don't answer the next couple slides, okay?
Is this all of Johnson County, including KC?
Absolutely.
Is it just Buffalo?
No, all of Johnson County.
Okay, so I'm just wondering how KC is affecting these numbers. Are their numbers going down as much as ours are?
They've already seen that transition. Their trend is actually going up. They've seen their trend go down several years ago, 140 to about 100, but they're up, I want to say, 10 to 12%.
Okay. Is that like how many kids grow?
In a small school, 10 to 12.
Yeah, last summer we got 13.
Yes. And they just lost a couple, so again, that number changes. Okay.
Like the majority of the kids are leaving and going to New West? Is that the decrease?
No, I wouldn't say that's the majority. I'm going to say the district established an alternative school. There's a number of kids. It is capped at 30. But even in reality, it's the overall district number that I need to focus on. That focus number is how many kids we have. So good point. You'll see some other slides here in a moment, but that doesn't answer the question of total number of kids district-wide that really impacts the whole district.
Yeah, I guess my just overall question is, when you look at it as a whole, like, why are people leaving would be the general question. And that graph shows the majority of them going to New West.
Okay, so there's a certain number of students going to New West, but that 30 students doesn't do the 150 or 200. So I'll try to answer that question when we look at the demographics. Okay? So, and if not, pull my laptop down here and I'll show you some other stuff. Okay? All right. So with that, Craig, let's go to the next slide.
One more question.
Oh, sorry.
I'm wondering if the correlation to student decrease, if you're comparing to teacher decrease or teacher loss, is that, are we holding steady to the same number of teachers as our student number?
Okay, so that's part of the initiative that we have in place. So you'll see that initiative out there. It's actually how do we stay within our funding or within our resources, and what does staffing look like, what does it look like for facilities? So that's part of this whole initiative, is really starting to develop what that looks like, because the student numbers are going down, okay? Question.
What constitutes high performance?
Okay, so we can go back to that. That's based on the state's evaluation assessment system, which is YTOP, and you see those other categories that are across there, and growth, achievement, and how we're scoring based on performance standards. So we have to align our curriculum to a set of standards that the state says this is what you should be teaching, and then we're assessed on it on YTOP. And then they take that data and show growth or show where we're at. So when we're talking about high-performing schools, it's in those categories where you say meets or exceeds or partially meets. Those are the standards we looked at when we started looking at consistently high-performing schools. That means they're meeting or they're exceeding the state expectations with education.
And it's all based off of YTOPs?
Okay. It's based off YTOP, absolutely. But in the reality, if you go to the district, they're also doing the assessments to take care of that. Not a one-time snapshot is what are we doing to grow kids. And that's a good conversation. We can go more into that, but that is the way the state is set up. Okay, so more information. So demographics. So when we talk about some different things that we're doing, because we're talking about what we're doing for career involvement and CTE courses. We started this about 18 months ago. It came out about 4 months ago that we were able to bring it public. But we as a school district were invited to be a part of a workforce project with the Wyoming Profile of a Graduate, the Governor's Ride, Whitney Benefits is supporting that. And so it's called the Pre-K 16 Pathways to Workforce Project. That means taking a look at how we provide education publicly. Okay, why public education needs to change and how we can get kids into careers, because we already know the research shows that not everybody's four-year bound. There's career, there's vocational schools, what we look like. So that process has started. We've got Sheridan College, we got all the Sheridan school districts, we got Johnson County, we got the Whitney Foundation, which is funding it. We got Foresight Law, who's funded by Whitney. And we have two REVs that's funded by the governor's office over here, sorry. Plus local industry, starting to have that conversation of what public education needs to look like in the future so that we can meet the changing needs of kids. So, informational fact there. The next one, which is a key factor for, again, why we're looking, because ADM drives it, Johnson County, when we started comparing schools, our base salary is at $47,500. In the teaching world, when we are competing with these districts of our size, our base salary is significantly lower. So when we start recruiting, 20 years ago, we'd have 100 applicants for a job. Now we're lucky to have one or two. And then we look at what the pay scale looks like over at the 5-year period and 10 period. How do we recruit people? So these numbers, when you look at the slideshow, it compares where we're sitting. This is an area that is a focus, because when we have about 20%, 20 to 25% of our staff that is going to retire, how do we recruit? Okay, how do we get young people in? What are we doing? So part of that focus is on how we get this base up. And some of that comes back to, I think, your original question, is that staffing and student piece. How do we get the model? Here's what I need you to understand. The model funds us for a base salary of about $40,600. I want to repeat that number. The model funds us at $40,600. Us and other districts are already significantly over.
In some cases, the key factor to that is where they've got that is they increase class sizes so they could increase salaries and bases, all right? And you're going to see that in some of this as we go through this. But this is another factor that was taken into consideration as we start looking at what are the things that are restricting us from making the decisions we need to make. So here's a population demographic. So if any of you are in this age group, I'm not being offensive to that piece. I'm just telling you where Johnson County sits. Right now, age 65 and plus, 20% of our population in Johnson County is over that. According to the statistician that I talked to last week who's doing an evaluation of Johnson County, 10 to 12 years ago, that was at 12%. Age 50 plus population, 50% of Johnson County. Now, with that being said, I asked him, how stable is our population? It's been very stable. So it always goes up and down, but there's been no huge spikes. So if you look at that summary, knowing that school funding is based on taxes and mineral taxes and some other things, we have a population in Johnson County that tells you two things. First of all, there's going to be a lot of fixed income. And the next thing is we don't have a lot of young families. All right? So, again, the demographics have kind of changed in Johnson County as we look over that. All right, here's some other scary information. Back in the 1970s, when we went to school and where we're at now, and this is done by Jamie Ballmer. He's done trainings throughout the state. He talked about the stress in education and where we're at. But the reality, back in the 1970s, there were only really 36 mandates that public schools had to deal with. Starting in 2000, we're at 117. This is 2025. We're easily well over probably 130, 140. So not only are schools trying to educate kids, there are expectations that are unbelievable on public school. Let me remind you, public school, schools that are funded and held accountable for how the funding goes. That's a huge increase. Just understanding what that balance looks like. The next stat, okay? Back in 2005, we had a population of 1,150 kids, basically, just rounded up. We're 1,130 kids. We supported five schools then. We support six schools now. Okay, just as a transition. So those are some things we look at. KC went from two schools to one K-12 school. So again, facts, not pointing anything out. I'm just saying the demographics of our district in general have changed. Right? These are things that I have to look at when presenting to the board. Craig, next slide. Okay, here's where the ADM comes in, when our numbers are down. So again, this is an SFC report. Mr. Zink and I have conversations with the state. We can argue this all day long, but their formula created according to ADM. This tells you that percentage, this is what they say. They say, not us, be very clear. We do not step up on a plane and go, oh, by golly, that's all we have. All right, we're defending that piece, but this is what the state says. So Meadowlark Elementary is at 80% of its capacity. Cloud Peak is 65. Clear Creek Middle School is at 58. BHS is at 50%. KC is at 45%, and New West High School is at 111%. That's a state report. All right, we don't generate that. We don't come up with these numbers, but these are the numbers we have to argue and defend with the state. So. But the reason for this slide is for you to understand these numbers get impacted with ADM. All right? These numbers are impacted. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, facility facts. State funding projected maintenance project. JCSD receives $1.5 million. This is approximate every year because age of buildings, ADM, all that impacts. State facilities condition assessment. This is the state telling us when they conducted an evaluation of our facilities, which that's a whole other argument. They did it, which I disagree with. Okay, that we have $20 million worth of projects on a $1.5 million budget between 2024 and 2030. Right? We did our own assessment. All right. And that own assessment is the next slide. We'll talk about that a little bit. Security enhancements, 2019 to present. We've added 164 cameras, implemented guest management systems because we have to have safety and some other things. Currently managing 189 security devices. We're a safe school district. However, a lot of people don't see these. So when you talk about this, this infrastructure has to be supported. Next slide. So with that, schools between 2005 and 2007 that were built, KCBHS, CCMS, are beginning to show significant issues. Third-party facility study we've done was over $35 million in building needs and upkeeps. All right, state expects these buildings to last 60 to 70 years. Okay, again, not doom and gloom. These are the challenges that sometimes we don't think about that we have to face with the funding that we do have. The reality for me is we didn't have anything in the pipeline for component projects. The district had, it takes 2 years to get in that pipeline. We got put in the pipeline because of this work right here with this third party, the work that Mr. Zink has done, the work. So KC High School, $4.5 million project for HVAC projects is in the pipeline, hopefully be approved this next legislative session. And it's not a want, it's a need. All right, when a boiler goes down, it's not $20,000 to fix it. It's a lot of money. So as we put these, we are doing our best to also make sure we're seeking additional funding to base on that. We have over 500,000 square feet that we maintain as a district. We have 206 acres. Okay, as a superintendent, those are not facts that I can just blow away. Those are all the things that we're responsible for as a district. Next slide. Okay, technology fact. Just since COVID and where we're at, our phones were crashing. We put the infrastructure in over the last 5 years so that we can hopefully be up to date and actually maintain them. So VoIP phones, wireless access point, classroom displays, laptops, Chromebooks to keep up with the changing times. With that, 1,300 Chromebooks, 170 iPads, 300 computers district-wide, extensive network infrastructure. This is the key point I want to point out. This is the infrastructure that we have to support. Servers, switches and routers, access points, VoIPs. This costs money and a lot of money to maintain. Okay, some people look at these numbers. For me as a superintendent, these numbers are more important. You can hear a gasp throughout the district when technology goes down. They don't have access and their computers don't go up, or you know, it's not just that, it's our software, how we do some different things. So those are some pretty big numbers. The next thing we're going to talk about, which I thought was an interesting fact, we always talk about transportation number of miles. Let's look at this, and then there's just some fun facts. So back in 2015, we had 34 drivers, averaging 350,000 miles a year with activities. We are now with 21 drivers, 13 drivers down, right there. Over 300,000 miles total on buses. That's quite an infrastructure. And you got 21 people. Here's your activity miles. And these are our coaches that teach. Okay, these are the people that are taking away from their families and being on something. And I just, you know, out of curiosity, let's just take the 3-year average right here in activities. We divide by 70 miles an hour because none of our bus drivers speed. They don't go over the speed limit. All right? We take those number of hours at 70 and we divide it by an 8-hour workday. We've got 200 workdays that we're spending on buses outside of what we do with kids. What we're doing for kids is extraordinary. Okay, what we're doing with opportunities, but we have to look at some of that because in our world, I'm also looking at how many parents are buying tires to travel and go some different places, but that's the nature of the beast in Wyoming because guess what? Conferences are set, you have to travel, you're doing things. And please hear this, this isn't one team. We've got 85% of our kids that are competing and involved in activities, and that's being supported here. But those are some pretty fascinating facts if you think about how many late nights and some different things we're doing. These are all things that we have to look at as we're going through this. But when you put that into perspective, education-wise, we're required to have 1,000 hours of contact time. So just some interesting facts. But let's look at this, 21 bus drivers. You got coaches, sponsors, kids, and everybody supporting that. There's a lot of things we're supporting kids with.
And if you see a coach and a sponsor who looks tired, you might want to say, hey, thanks, all right, for what that looks like. And this is from a coach from 16 years riding on a yellow Cadillac all the way around the world and back, and in snowstorms. So these aren't things that just happen in a sunny day with air-conditioned vehicles. So anyway, on to the next slide. Our strategic plan, critical to what we're doing. Exciting thing about it, the Board of Trustees allowed us to revisit our strategic plan, and this is what our intentional focus is this year, to use this plan to help guide us with what we're doing as a district. So, empowering all students to thrive, the next one. Okay, our vision, united in cultivating excellence, next one. Here are our values, integrity, resilience, pride, and respect, and then we'll go into our goals and objectives. All right, enhance learning and growth through essential academic life skills, strengthen culture and engagement, and operate an effective and efficient organization. This means we have to come back and look at where our efficiencies are. So on to the next slide. Okay, how do we do it? Here's the answer. It has to be done with the community and JCSE really taking a hard look at what do we really want and what can we provide and stay within our means. So as we move to that, we're going to have to do this together. Next slide. These are the part of the strategic plan. We're going to have to evaluate programs, required staffing, all processes and systems, which we've been doing. Number three, all right, effective use of facility space, maximizing instruction, time, schedule, and utilization. Because let me tell you one thing. That we don't get more of or less of. As a matter of fact, the day doesn't, I wish there was 72 hours in a day. Sometimes I wish there was 30 days in a week. We could get a lot of things done, but that is one thing that we're trying to emphasize. What do we do within that amount of time and not, in some cases, 20 to 30% of our staff during the amount. Okay, next slide. The board and district administration set parameters for long-term sustainability. Is up to building principals and departments and leadership to collaborate with their teams and as a team to bring this vision to life. And I know we keep saying vision, and I'm going to say that a lot, but it comes back to me just being honest enough to say, have a hard conversation. It's not about me going home and sleeping good at night. As a matter of fact, it's probably because I have ulcers, because you go, are you making the right decision? The reality is, I have to look at the facts. I have to be able to say, I don't want to have to be the superintendent in 2 years to say, look, we don't have the funds to operate, and so we make cuts. So it's starting to look at the process now and how we can make changes, knowing that a lot of things are changing around us. So here's a key fact. We've already started this journey. How about with this journey, we're already starting to reduce staff, which I think is part of the question we had over here. However, some of the things we're running into is our own policies and procedures that don't allow us to make decisions because we're locked into this is what we have to have. And I want to come back to that statement. The bare minimum. If policy allows us to not be cornered or to be cornered into something and numbers go up, we're there. But when we're looking at policy and graduation, that's kind of where we're at. We'll go on to the next slide. And this is where we are not. I was challenged last year by saying, how do other districts do it? How do other districts get $53,000? Well, there's a lot of key factors in there. So when you go out and look at it, you look at class size formulas of 20, 25, 18, 18, that's the reduction in staff we would have to meet that. That's not where we're going. We've got to find the balance. Do we want to be at 53,000, the highest base in the state, or do we want to just be competitive and say we have a great culture? That's where we're looking at. How do we do that, and how do we do that in such a way that I need to keep teachers? But I can also say, because of the economy of scale, we're never going to compete with a Gillette and a Trump. That's just the way it is. They have a $150 million budget. We're not even close. So there are some transitions. There are some things we're looking at. So key point, not our option, but we've got to find a balance. All right? So we need to intentionally establish policies and procedures that allow flexibility in adapting to a changing educational challenges and enabling us, JCSD 1, number one, to sustain if things change in funding and not have to do a knee-jerk reaction. That's what I'm asking as we kind of move through the credit reduction. Okay, and again, it's the minimum. So with that, I can do question and answers, and then we've got a few more slides.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.